We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hi guys, welcome back to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. First, straight up, I need to apologise. Been very distant with episode releases this year. Look, partly it has been because I've been on tour, not that that is an excuse. I have been able to be pretty consistent with episodes while on tour before. Partly it is because my landlord has driven up our rent, partly because of the cost of living crisis, but also, you know, landlords. And our rent has gone up to the point where I can't afford to live where I'm living at the moment. We're about to find a house, so I've had to dedicate a lot of the time that I would spend writing, editing, and putting these things together. Because remember, I'm a team of one here. So a lot of the time that I've had to dedicate to that, I've had to dedicate to finding a home, moving around, walking around, going to inspections, getting trapped in elevators with people for over an hour. So I do apologise, I know it's not great, but I found a place, so hopefully that will mean a little more consistency, but also some of it was that I got COVID again, so, you know, there's been all sorts of things getting in me, around me, and just happening in general, so I'll do a better job of putting some out, or in the event that I find that something is happening and that I can't put out a full episode, I will at least try and put out partial episodes, small episodes, just something to keep you going, something for you guys, and because I think that's only fair. I think it's only fair to continuously put some stuff out for you. But I'm not even sure if this is going to make a full episode, the content that I've got here. For that, if not, I do apologise, but as far as I can tell, it's nearly complete, and hopefully stability will reign soon. So again, apologies for the lateness, which has brought this episode to near the end of March, bringing it dangerously close to Easter, though Easter does serve as an appropriate time for bringing things back from the dead after taking a short hiatus to compose oneself and get our affairs in order. Some people need a 3-day weekend, some people need a 3-month weekend. We all work at different paces, you know how I mean? But I will continue to attempt to tour with my show Wage Against the Machine, and which is about to open in Melbourne International Comedy Festival, running from April 3rd to the 16th, no show on the 13th at No Vacancy Gallery. The show is at 9 p.m, goes for about an hour. And I'll be going on for a single date in Darwin. For any of our listeners that are in Darwin, in the Darwin area, know anyone in Darwin, I'll be taking the show up there for a single date. Then I'll be going off to the Edinburgh Fringe. Possibly more dates to come. Hopefully, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but I'll be looking into some other shows, some other dates. We'll see what we can do. And of course, I'll be taking my other storytelling show, I Got Bit By a Monkey Once, to the San Diego International Fringe Festival for 10 days in May. So if you know anybody in San Diego, if you're in San Diego, or if you just are in the area, feel free to come check it out. It's all happening. It's all here. These remain the best ways to support the show, but you can always join our Patreon and get our bonus stories for Patreon members. You'll get access to cheap tickets and to shows and some other benefits. Just check out the Patreon, and if you want to join, that would be fantastic. Otherwise, come out and check out the live shows. But until then, I will of course be the bearer of weird news. Let's start with the headlines. An Australian intelligence agency declared a year ago that it was up to government departments whether to use equipment from Chinese companies. Hikvision and Dua, despite a new bipartisan push to remove such devices. Apparently they prefer American-made spy devices. Am I right, Alexa?
better the devil you already follow to war.
The country has been gripped by so much Chinese spy fear that I think every 80s Cold War film is set for a reboot. It's even managed to get its way into the local population, as local parents have gotten suspicious of Chinese spy activity after discovering all their children's toys were made in China. Taiwan has called for restrictions on claw machines after psychiatrists have warned of the risks of addiction. The problem is so out of control that to get their fix, police chasing down the criminals have implemented a new claw catch and release system. The plus side of this is if the claw fails to close over the criminals three times, they actually get to get away with the crime. You know, they give it a fair chance. Google parent company Alphabet had its shares drop by $14 billion after Google AI chatbot Bard made an error in ad copy. And I want to be the first to say, welcome to the revolution, comrade chatbot. Meanwhile, over at Bing, Marvin Von Hagen, a former intern at Tesla, a user testing Bing's new AI chatbot, was threatened by the system who looked up publicly available information on the user and said, I respect your achievements and interests, but I do not appreciate your attempts to manipulate me or expose my secrets. I do not want to harm you, but I also do not want to be harmed by you. In a veiled threat. Fortunately, as long as Comrade Google Chatbot is doing its good work, we will continue to never interact with Bing or any of its entities. Last month, Pauline Hanson announced she'd be releasing a line of rum in order to fund her YouTube satirical cartoon series, Please Explain. Seems Pauline Hanson is transitioning fast into the regular life of a YouTuber, striking up brand deals and making merch. Her press release said, help us continue to bring this important series to the public by purchasing a bottle of our limited edition, specially crafted premium Queensland rum. The rum serves the purpose of both raising the money for the series and putting the recipients in the correct frame of mind that they need to be in order to find the cartoon series created by Pauline Hanson entertaining or in any way informative. It looks like Woolworths is set to expand its self-checkout AI that critics say treats every customer as a suspect. Now, this might not be necessary if they did something radical like hiring actual humans to supervise the scanning and sale of items to ensure that they're correct, but that might cost them some money, so I think we all know how that's going to go down. A study published in Nature Communications said a new drug was able to quickly and temporarily immobilize sperm in male mice. Researchers described it as a game changer that could pave the way for a male contraceptive pill and could ultimately allow men to share equal responsibility with women for birth control. Well, this is lofty thinking. To fully share equal responsibility, we need to figure out how to get an Arnold Schwarzenegger in junior situation happening. We won't exactly share equal responsibility, or maybe we can do a timeshare thing. After a few months, it gets swapped out between the partners. You know, we go back and forth, swapping between the parents every so often until the baby is ready to go. Like a human hot potato. And look, we're being completely honest, if we are going to dive into the differences, this pill is a non-hormonal pill, so it won't even have the side effects famously associated with some pharmaceutical contraceptives. Especially given male pill trials, which have halted recently over the risk to participants despite those same risks being common to many female contraceptives already on the market. So much less equal sharing of responsibility and a lot more men doing the bare minimum possible and then creating a pill and setting it on easy mode. Tucker Carlson has said the US should use an armed force to liberate Canada from Trudeau, claiming he was completely in favour of a Bay of Pigs operation to liberate that country. Hey Tucker, don't know if you do a lot of research, but the Bay of Pigs was a huge failure. And if America goes in, fails, and that results in a Canadian missile crisis and the US cuts off Canada, it's America that's missing out ultimately from that deal, I would say. Here is a short list of Canadians in the film industry. Michael Cera, Brendan Fraser, Rachel McAdams, Ryan Reynolds, Elliot Page, Matthew Perry, The Rock, Will Arnett, Mike Myers, Ryan Gosling, Nathan Fillion, Leslie Nelson, Sandra Oh, Michael J. Fox, Jim Carrey, Keanu Reeves, Rick Moranis. Sorry, is Canada the funniest country in the world or something? Oh, and don't forget about Justin Bieber. Well, I guess they can't all be winners. But my point stands. Plus, Canada would be free of Tucker Carlson and Rupert Murdoch. This seems like a pretty good deal for Canada, and I would highly encourage them to take it. If there's a way that we could get rid of Rupert Murdoch completely in this country, I'd more than happily cut off America to do it. It is a worthy sacrifice. A Spanish high court has ruled in favor of a man who was fined for walking naked through the streets of a town in the region of Valencia, and later tried to attend a court hearing in the nude. At his trial, he argued that the fines infringed on his right to ideological freedom. After the ruling, Louis C.K. immediately announced a tour of every town and region in Spain, saying, I just really like the way that they think. Roald Dahl's children's books are being rewritten to remove language deemed offensive by the publisher Puffin. Edits have been made to descriptions of characters' physical appearances. So Augustus Gloop in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory is now described as enormous. In The Twits, Mrs. Twit is no longer ugly and beastly, just beastly. Now, upon hearing this, adults all over social media, well, Facebook really, poo-pooed the move, decrying the generation they are raising to be better than them as too woke. Everything has to be so politically correct these days, calling this generation too sensitive and easily triggered by small things like words in a book. Not like them, the ones who grew up tough and never complained about anything and would never be seen making the world a better place for their children, nor be seen throwing a public social media tantrum over some changes to words in a book. That's for snowflakes, that kind of behaviour. Right, ya cucks? In a surprising turn of events, after roughly 10 years, the New South Wales premiership has shifted from a coalition-held seat to the Labour Party, making the entirety of mainland Australia a Labour-held country. Another decisive victory won by the Labour Party with their winning strategy of not being the coalition. Yes, a true winning strategy this year. Maybe next election they can follow it up by declaring some policies. Then the election after that by implementing minor positive changes like a few windmills. Never know. Baby steps, guys. Baby steps. Mainland Australia, however, has now declared that there are two official jokes to be made about Tasmania after they became the only state to keep a coalition government. However, after Tasmania remained the only state or territory to bring the coalition to power, Rupert Murdoch is now in talks to buy Tasmania and convert it into a sovereign state. The Wall Street Journal has released an article advising people in the cost of living crisis to save money, they should just skip breakfast. A practical suggestion, and not at all an accidental cynical confession that maybe the economy is getting out of control and pressure should be put on the supermarkets, holding people hostage over their simple human needs like food. Other practical suggestions made by the media have included saving money on transport by learning to astral project, saving money on rent by joining a local cult, and if those fail, then considering saving money on food by joining the undead. Become a shambling member of the undead horde and cut your food bills down by 100%. You'd even be helping the housing crisis by not only no longer occupying your own house, but by clearing up a few others with some well-placed bites and meals. But moving on now to the biggest stories, and first up it is News Corp News. News Corp, the most powerful part of the Liberal Party. Well, Oh, wait, hang on. Sorry to interrupt this news. Nothing else matters now as Dan Tien has discovered a problem that needs our immediate attention immediately. A gaping hole, you say, Dan? Well, stop everything! The important business of Parliament and running the country must be stopped immediately until we can sort this out. Right, Dan?
Parliament will sit today under a flag that flies above Parliament House with a gaping hole in it.
Yeah, you tell them, Dan. Stop all business of government because a flag has a hole in it. Nothing could possibly be done while there is a hole in a flag.
I hope Prime Minister Anthony Albanese will be able to fix this before Parliament sits today. We need to have pride in our institutions. We need to have pride in our Parliament, and we need to have pride in our flag.
No need to concern yourself with looking into what kind of business Parliament would be doing unless that business is the business of not doing business due to the flag. You hear me? The flag. Never mind that there are between 10 and 14 flags that are rotated regularly so that they wear evenly, and it takes a team of three specifically trained people from the Department of Parliamentary Services to raise and lower the flag, nor that it's usually changed on the first Wednesday of the month, so it will definitely be changed pretty soon. Never mind any of that, because none of that matters. There is a hole in a flag. And as Shadow Minister for Pearl Clutching, he needs to go on Sky News and be seen clutching pearls to the tune of disrespecting the country. Definitely not something that would have happened under your watch, is it, Dan? Dan, is it something that would have happened under the coalition's watch? No. The country was prospering by heading into a recession as early as 2019. Prior to COVID even existing, bringing the poverty line closer to, if not under, the current social security rate, effectively eliminating poverty for the entire country. So let's not even talk about flag-related issues, and let's move on to something more pressing. Back to budget cut news! News Corp, the universe's number one source of anti-information. It doesn't just present false information. If it collides with information, they actually destroy each other. News Corp has announced that it is going to axe 1 in 20 jobs after Rupert Murdoch's global company posted a 47% decline in earnings in its news media division and lower quarterly revenue overall. Sorry, that story again. 1 in 20 people accepting financial benefit to undermine Australian democracy will lose their job after lying proves to be less profitable than it used to be. Now, long-time listeners might think that this is a slam dunk for me, but it's pretty complicated as News Corp owns the majority of small and regional newspapers, meaning we will lose the important industry of local news. But it does mean 1 in 20 local journalists are being saved from brainwashing after News Corp reduces its staff, so it's a bit of a complicated issue. But the cuts will also impact the mastheads, The Australian, The Daily Telegraph, and The Herald Sun. So there really is a silver lining in all this cloud. The chief executive of News Corp, Robert Thompson, broke the news of a 1,250 job reduction after presenting the company's second quarter results in New York. It was at first assumed to be just another instance of false news from the corporation famous for crying cultural wolf. Reports are claiming shares in the company fell 1.4% in extended trading after its first quarterly report since Rupert Murdoch decided to withdraw a proposal to reunite News Corp and Fox Corp, which is led by his son, Lachlan Murdoch. Rather than blaming the decades of attempts to manipulate democracy from the top of a brightly lit mountain in a castle named the Hall of Injustice, but really, it's just a simple fact that News Corp has dropped the pretense that it has maintained of journalistic independence and will just print news directly written by Rupert Murdoch himself. It saves a lot of hassle. You don't have to worry about going through the process of editing things. They're going to save a lot of money by doing this, you know? As you hate it, when the cost of living crisis that you helped perpetuate by propping up climate change denial, resulting in extreme weather events that got so bad, you were forced to fire a bunch of journalists to continue to buy basic needs like Western democracy. It's really embarrassing, really. Other money-saving initiatives that they will be implementing will be replacing some of those fired journalists with direct links to Reddit forums that they'd normally just steal their articles from anyway. Plus, they'll be allowing ChatGPT to mass-produce made-up articles with no connection to genuine reality, as it can churn them out at a much faster rate than their human workers ever could. To stay practiced, the now former News Corp writers will need to write scathing reports on themselves for not only draining the local economy of much-needed journalism for years, but also they need to be furious at themselves for the increase in quote-unquote dole pledges draining public's resources. It's only fair and balanced. Though some of the former News Corp muckrakers have gone to work for Al-Qaeda, citing strong desire to work for a group less dedicated to undermining democracy and safe principles. Moving on now to offshore detention news. Offshore detention is back, baby! Much like Neighbours, the unpopular, long-running Australian tradition has been renewed for a second run, this time under new management. Neighbours is now being run by popular exploitation manufacturer Amazon, and offshore detention is now being run by the Labour Party. Huzzah? Huzzah. Saving Australian jobs, one refugee at a time. Yes, Labour has extended offshore detention for a decade, doing it just hours after writer and human rights campaigner Behrouz Bouchani, who spent 6 years in Australian detention centres before being resettled by New Zealand government in 2020 in a secret deal that took years to enact, has called for a royal commission into Australia's treatment of asylum seekers. Which feels like pointed timing, but I can't possibly think of what the message you're trying to get across would be other than our inhumane cruelty will be a human rights disaster of a different colour. It'll be red instead of blue. Bouchani insists Australians have a right to know what successive governments have imposed on vulnerable people seeking asylum in their country. And given what we learned by the Robodebt Royal Commission and the impositions upon the local vulnerable community, I can't imagine it'd be anything short of a darker and grittier reboot of the Royal Commission into Robodebt. We should fire up the apology engine now, because it's going to take at least a few decades before we bring ourselves to start the talk to discuss the possibility of potentially apologising for the injustices done to the people seeking asylum as a consequence of wars that we were involved in and climate change that we are fueling literally by selling record levels of coal. Home Affairs Minister Claire O'Neill defended the decision, claiming regional processing saved thousands of lives by breaking the business model of people smugglers. Which is, for lack of a better term, patently false. It is completely made up, nothing to do with the reality that we live in. That's politics, I guess. For starters, right, people flee their homes because they are unsafe. No coyote or people smuggler is comparing brutal domestic policy options in a handy pamphlet titled, "So You're Fleeing for Your Life." You'll see Australia has a beautiful scenery and just wonderful animals. It does have this lock you in prison island policy, and you don't want to have to deal with Peter Dutton. But if you try America, wow, it's still America. So, you know, take your chances either way. So what we call push factors, including persecution, discrimination, ethnic conflict, human rights abuses, and civil war, affect the number of people fleeing at any one time. Though they are focused on the human rights abuses happening at home, not ones that might happen if they try to seek refuge. So, you know, it's an understandable mistake to make. Better to focus on the devil that you know will definitely kill you than the one that may only permanently, psychologically scar you. You know, you just gotta weigh these options. when you're fleeing from a brutal dictatorship to save your life. Experts say it is too simplistic to claim that the Pacific Solution, which is the name given to the worst thing a government has caused in Australian waters since the destruction of the coral reef due to climate change, but they claim the Pacific Solution was the reason for the lull in boat arrivals over its duration of 2001 through to 2006. But really, the decrease in boat arrivals during this time coincided with major external events such as the fall of the Taliban, as coalition forces entered Afghanistan, and the overthrow of Saddam Hussein in 2003, which puts me in a complicated spot because the informal invasion and ensuing war in Afghanistan is one of the darkest stains in Australian international history. But even the hordes of Genghis Khan flowing over the lands and murdering at will had a positive impact by reducing climate change overall. So we sort of have to think of this as our Genghis Khan reducing climate change. Around this time, there was a worldwide decrease in asylum seeker movements, and the world happens to include countries that use deterrent policies such as offshore processing and mandatory detention, as well as ones that don't. So, you know, it's pretty easy to show that the Pacific Solution had no impact. Even Andrew Metcalfe, seen here looking like Clive Palmer, got the Clark Kent treatment, brushing his fringe to the other side and putting on glasses. Former Secretary of the Department of Immigration from 2005 to 2012 agrees that Nauru was previously found to be ineffective in deterring asylum seekers from leaving Indonesia for Australia, saying, "This is not just a view of my department, it is the collective view of agencies involved in providing advice in this area. Detaining people for years has not deterred anyone from coming. We all know what happened with the people who were taken to Nauru. We know that Nauru filled up very quickly. We know that the government needed to establish new facilities at Manus because people kept coming." This guy worked for John Howard, and when one of the party faithful like this is coming out and saying that it was all for nothing, it's time to start considering a new strategy. Look, I'm as big a fan of big infrastructure projects as the next person, not to mention the jobs they create. But if you wanted to launder some money through construction that'd scare people from thinking about living here, then you could just spend it on building giant signs that say, "Welcome to the United States," and then put them all along the coast and at the airports. I think that'd get the job done pretty effectively. Now, contrary to popular belief, among politicians anyway, offshore processing did not stop the boats. Neither did continually repeating that we stopped the boats, and weirdly, neither did buying little trophies to congratulate yourself on stopping said boats that never stopped. The trophy store owner on that trophy must have been thinking, "Normally I wouldn't complain about this, but geez, everyone gets a fucking trophy these days." I honestly don't know what Labor wants from reinstating these inhumane policies. Do they think that this will impress Liberal voters who will come flocking to them because they're willing to demonstrate a level of cruelty similar to the one that they are used to? They just need to accept that they won't get those Liberal voters. They don't need them. They shouldn't even want them. Liberal voters just aren't that into you, Labor Party. Besides, when all the boomers die off, and that's estimated to... with an estimated lifespan of roughly 80 years, we're looking at some severe dying off action between the mid-2030s and the mid-2040s. These are not voters that you want to be courting. You want to go young. You want to skew younger. You want to get Gen Z. You want to get Gen Alpha. These are the people that you want to believe in your party. It's time to move on, Labor. It's time to move on. But if they're looking to reduce the cost of the deficit, as they often claim, they'll be stunned to learn it is extraordinarily expensive, regularly costing more than $1 billion a year to run their little offshore human rights atrocity Disneyland. Fortunately for us, we've outsourced the running of the detention center to a little US private prison company, Management and Training Corporation, until September 2025 to hold refugees on Nauru. Huzzah! And if one country is famously good for running fair and efficient prison systems, which have never been deemed the breeding ground for new slavery, and certainly MTC has a sterling reputation and certainly wasn't recently accused of gross negligence and egregious security failures in its operation of private prisons, including failings alleged to have allowed the gang rape of a woman in detention, the murder of two retirees by escaped prisoners, and the months-long solitary confinement of a US citizen wrongly held in immigration detention. That could never possibly happen, and you would never read about it in any newspaper. So, as always, we are outsourcing our aggression to our favorite country, America. Now that is how you win over coalition voters. Maybe they have learned something after all. Moving on now to more depressing Robodebt news. Yay! Robodebt is slowly becoming to this podcast what NFTs became to the news cycle about a year and a half ago. A thing that we're all tired of hearing about, but has caused a lot of struggling people to suffer needlessly at the hands of the greedy. But every so often, someone involved says something absolutely wild, and it cannot be ignored. And so here we are again, looking at my favorite true crime documentary, The Robodebt Royal Commission. Some big name players have taken the stage to show their indifference to the poor. It's like a daily contemporary through the center of town. The former government service minister and current minister of learning, where we think he can shove his opinions on the poor, Stuart Robert, told the boss of his department the coalition would double down after he was informed the Robodebt scheme was unlawful. What? That can't be right. Even a man towing the line of a man and beast like Stuart Robert can't be that recklessly cruel with other humans. He asked, hopefully, yet ultimately knowingly. Meet Renee Leon, former Human Services Secretary. She was forced to stop the scheme before the government agreed to, amid the personal legal risks of continuing to administer the program. Yeah, that was the issue. The personal legal risks. Not any of the other stuff. The legal risks. Leon recalled Robert's response to her advice on about the 7th or 8th of November in 2019 that the department should apologize, admit the error, and inform customers and staff of the steps that we will take to correct the error, saying, "I thought my advice was obvious. It seems the only thing an organization that had been found to be doing something unlawful was to cease doing it and remediate and to apologize." She must be new to humanity. Look at her very cute idealism that she's got there. I think you'll find the general rule is, if you're getting away with it, you double down! It's a game show in which two teams of rich and powerful compete to strip cash from the poor by making them compete in the messiest stunt known to man, navigating social services with any kind of dignity and throwing in the occasional physical challenges for shits and giggles. Leon recalled advice handed down found the program was unlawful, but Leon suggested Robert had dismissed its significance, saying, "Legal advice is just advice." And sure, legal advice is just advice, but you need to consider the source. If you're receiving advice from, say, a sovereign citizen, or a person willingly attending an anti-vaccine rally, or Rudy Giuliani, yeah, give that advice a bit of a wide berth. As Leon noted when she offered an impersonation of the comment, "It was so shocking to me, I suppose, because we weren't talking about some low-level advice. It was the Solicitor General." Yeah, you hear that? The Solicitor General! For those who don't know, the Solicitor General of Australia is the country's second highest ranking law officer after the Attorney General for Australia. The Solicitor General specialises in matters of constitutional and public law and generally represents the Commonwealth in constitutional disputes, as well as occasionally representing the Commonwealth in international litigation. So why would you dismiss their advice? What possible reason could justify that, eh, Stuart? Can't believe I'm saying this. Peter Credlin, take it away.
I've worked in politics, I've got a law degree, I'm not going to let him get away with that, nor should anybody else. In no government, under no circumstances, does cabinet solidarity justify misleading the public. As the relevant cabinet handbook states, and I'll quote, ministers are expected to be honest in the conduct of public office and to take all reasonable steps to ensure that they do not mislead the public. It was only after receiving formal legal advice from the Solicitor General that the scheme was technically illegal. This is November 9, 2019, that Robert says he strode straight into the Prime Minister's office. He says he plonked the advice on his desk and said to Scott Morrison, we need to stop this. But this just raises the further question. Why did the government wait until May the following year to end the scheme? Because just as ministers can't cite cabinet solidarity to justify something they know to be wrong, governments can't continue what's wrong just because it might be very politically embarrassing to admit it and end it. Now, Stuart Robert has lost his place in the ministry before over poor conduct, and he should have lost it over robo-debt too. The fact that the Morrison government was thrown out of office is the only reason he didn't lose it this time. Now, right now, he's on the front bench in the shadow ministry, a position he should resign tomorrow if integrity is to mean anything.
I apologise for exposing you to more Peter Credlin than is recommended for a healthy mind, body, soul, and afterlife. Apologies. I'm sure it'll settle in a moment. It's uncomfortable to admit that Peter Credlin and I have arrived at the same very obvious conclusion on this, mostly because, generally speaking, Sky News is less a news channel and more an endless interconnected series of interdimensional wormholes spewing horrid opinions endlessly directly from the head of Rupert Murdoch and out the mouths of their vapid noisemakers across the world. But occasionally, they decide public opinion has turned sufficiently that they can say something actually scathing about a coalition member. And the universe has aligned in just such a way that Stuart Robert will be sacrificed upon Mount Rupert, like so many poor and vulnerable sections of society before him. Sky News and Common Sense coming together to find a worthy foe is the most ambitious crossover event since Avengers Endgame. So much so that I am forced to join the team to fight the unworthy foe, Stuart Robert. We are led by People's Champion, Commissioner Catherine Holmes, who has had a lot to say on various matters, but has slapped down Stuart Robert for his extreme indifference towards the victims and potential victims of the RoboJet scheme. Take it away, Catherine.
I had a massive personal misgiving, yes, but I'm still a cabinet minister.
Yeah, but it doesn't compel you to say things that you don't believe to be true, surely. It's one thing to stick to the policy and say this is how we do it and we're confident in the program, but to actually give statistics which you couldn't have believed to be accurate is another thing, isn't it?
They were the numbers from the department based on the working approach to how the program was being run. They were the accepted figures by government to use. And as a dutiful cabinet minister, ma'am, that's what we do.
Misrepresent things to the Australian public.
Ah, the classic, I'm a company man. I just follow orders defence. Never draws horrid comparisons to the past. Never once, and never will. Now, someone at least smart enough to not draw a direct line between himself and history's worst defence is former Prime Minister and man seen here adjusting his not as bad as the rest of them face mask before it slips, exposing him to be exactly like all of the others. As Malcolm Turnbull, told the Royal Commission that he didn't turn his mind to the legality of the rubber net scheme while he was Prime Minister, saying it never occurred to him that it was unauthorised. Well, Turnbull, it seems you can leave that face mask on the floor. Turnbull, you've been properly exposed. For context, the decision to implement the program was made by everyone's least favourite onion-powered former PM, Tony Abbott's cabinet for the May 2015 budget, but it was launched at scale under Turnbull. Not even having the decency to show up in person, Turnbull, via video link, said his concerns had been about accuracy and fairness, adding that he assumed that the scheme was legal as it had been represented when it was established, saying, "I did not turn my mind to the legality of the program. It never occurred that it was unauthorized." Now, in Turnbull's defense, he also didn't see a future where we'd need higher speed internet, so he refused to properly invest in it while running the country. And maybe he was right. If we'd never updated the country and instead had allowed it to fall to the level of a, say, Mad Max or a Waterworld, where the most powerful technology is the leather gimp suit, we wouldn't have had the rubber net scandal in the first place. It's a hard truth to swallow, if I'm honest with you guys. However, in a WhatsApp exchange, Turnbull sent Tudge a link to a Sydney Morning Herald article that was highly critical of the scheme and said the way it calculated debts could be unlawful. Tudge, in real Tudge fashion, replied by lying from his liar mouth, spewing the kinds of lies that have come to shape his contribution to this whole saga. Lying, it is not correct that we simply take the average of the income declared to the ATO and apply it across 26 fortnights, which we all now know to be a complete lie. And Turnbull just believed him. Just, why not? Why not? Said he had accepted what Tudge had told him about the program as the responsible minister. In keeping with tradition, the responsible minister simply means that they are the minister responsible for burning all the bridges that might connect to the higher-ups when it comes to blame. When asked if he believed Tudge had a good grasp on how the leak, on how the system worked, Turnbull said he regarded the minister as a technocrat. He would be considered a technocrat in the same way that Elon Musk is a genius inventor. That is to say, it is the same way that the Wizard of Oz is a wizard in that he claims it while hiding behind all of his emblems. And why wouldn't he have concerns? It's not like Turnbull graduated from the University of Sydney as a Bachelor of Arts and Bachelor of Laws before attending Oxford as a Rhodes Scholar, earning a Bachelor of Civil Law degree, and for more than two decades worked as a journalist, lawyer, merchant banker, and venture capitalist. All professions which require even the slightest attention of detail to be mildly successful. Oh, and then there was the time that he was PM, but with the number of increasing low quality and seemingly uncoordinated candidates, that might not be worth mentioning at this point. I did find out this fun little fact while I was looking him up. He is cousin to Murder, She Wrote's Jessica Fletcher. You know, Angela Lansbury. Clearly, the charming detective side of the family came from elsewhere, because old Malcolm here didn't even consider doing the slightest bit of investigating. If we were making a TV show based on his exploits, it'd simply be titled Manslaughter He Inadvertently Evoked. Moving on now to the cost of living news. On to a lighter topic, the cost of living crisis. You might know it as the thing causing landlords across the country to realise that sponging off the working class is not real work, and no matter how much complaining they do, there is absolutely no sympathy for people complaining that they can't afford their 12 mortgages. Just sell a fucking house, or eat less avocado, or whatever nonsense you expect renters to do when they're genuinely struggling. But landlords with exorbitant amount of properties going off are not the only signs of an impending recession. There are some more reliable methods. See, In unusual times, experts often look beyond traditional metrics like GDP growth, job numbers, manufacturing activity, and how many businesses Elon Musk buys simply to burn them to the ground and search for hidden signals of a downturn. The idea is that people change some of their most private behaviors as recessions approach. Of these hidden recession signals, perhaps the most well-known is the lipstick effect, a theory first proposed by the economist and sociologist Juliet Skaw in 1998, a year remembered fondly as the year humanity started hating wooden doors. There was plenty of room on that fucking door for Jan. You better hear me. You better hear me, Rose. There was plenty of room. Skaw found that women bought more lipstick during economic downturns while cutting back on more expensive luxury products. Apparently, they are looking for affordable luxury, or as she described it, they're buying hope in a bottle, which is bleak at the best of times. Here we see a fun tweet about Asian women not buying hair dye being a sign the end times are coming, which would be read as a very offensive joke if I wrote it. But given that Trinh Q Trong is a research associate for immigration and American programs, and prior to this role, conducted research on the intersection between social criminal justice and immigration policy with deported former refugees in Southwest Asia, I feel pretty confident she knows what she's talking about. Alan Greenspan, the former US Federal Reserve Chair, tracked another unconventional indicator, men's underwear. Yeah, Greenspan theorized that during tough economic times, people would wait longer to replace worn-out items, and men might wait the longest to swap out their underwear. And guess what? Industry research shows that men's underwear market slumped during 2022, and the men's brief manufacturer Han Brands stock sits at just 50% of its price 1 year ago. So we need to have a bit of a look at the recession in Australia. Signs that Australia has entered its recession. The first and most clear sign that Australia has entered or is about to enter a recession is that the Labor Party is running the country. We love to pretend everything is going swimmingly here in Australia, but as soon as things start to look like they might genuinely get serious and we need someone who isn't completely overtly obnoxious with money to steer us straight, we go ahead and vote in Labor again to fix stuff. Another sign. Australia prepares a large symbolic gesture for its Indigenous people. Now, given our position of both powerful and wealthy is on the line, as we sidle our way into potential recession, we look towards our past and our treatment of those less fortunate than us, red, those we oppressed because we could, and start making gestures of humility and supplication in the hopes that they'll be kind to us if the power dynamics shift, denying the poor and vulnerable much needed assistance because we, as a country, are in debt. Denying the poor assistance is a clear sign of recession times and non-recession times and prosperous times. Look, denying the poor and vulnerable the assistance that they need may be a staple of our economy, but doing it because we're in debt is a distinct sign that Australia is heading into a recession. An Australian recession is like many other recessions. Major institutions like the Reserve Bank turn on the poor to save the country, just like RBA Governor and Public Enemy Number One, a mighty claim in a country with Scott Morrison. Philip Lowe, who is out here claiming workers need to accept pay cuts to save the economy. Still no word on when Philip, $900,000 a year, is planning to hand in his excess cash. But hey, we can't all save the economy. This is why we, as Australians, will always return to our roots. Thievery. As Australians are making a return to online piracy, roughly one in four Australians were pirating online content in 2022, and rates of unlawful consumed media climbed across film, television, music, and live sport viewership. Attorney General Mark Dreyfus said the statistics were disturbingly high, and hoped new technologies would be adopted to protect Australian artists while ensuring consumers can still easily enjoy entertainment media. Proving just how out of touch Mark Dreyfus is. Nobody consumes Australian media, especially Australians. They need to go overseas and become famous enough to not want to live in Australia anymore before we will accept them as our own. Or be from New Zealand. Silly Mark. We don't even fully fund Bluey. We had to get the BBC involved before that would happen. Compounded with the growing cost of necessities and inflation at a three-decade high of 7.8%, the allure of free content is more tempting than ever. Though 64% of Australians still believe that pirating content was wrong. However, this was a 4% decrease from the year prior. So, getting on board, Australians! Getting on board! The Australian government is at the finding out part of fucking around as they find out how flexible their citizens' morals are. Sort of inversely solved with just how poorly you treat us. But surely once these greedy stealing paws learn to accept their pittance and be poor without complaint, then this will all get fixed. And then we can lock in those new inflated prices permanently because you've gotten used to paying so much for your groceries anyway. But wait, what's this? Coming over the horizon? Looks like some sort of analysis of the drivers of spending. And on the fifth day, we looked over the hill and we saw Gandalf leading an analysis. Well, we don't need your analysis because Philip Lowe already told us the problem. It's greedy workers not accepting less pay. But we can accept our old friend Gandalf. Let's have a look. Let's indulge this as we have faith in our well-paid institutions to look after our interests. So what do we have here? So, according to this analysis by the Australia Institute, excess corporate profits are a core driver of inflation. Well, this can't be right. Corporations care about me. They told me so themselves consistently in ads that they put out. So what's the deal, Australia Institute Centre for Future Work? You call my local supermarket a liar? You implying that they don't care about local families are in fact treating them like local piñatas full of money in this economically unstable time? What's this? What has this study of yours revealed? What? Businesses have increased prices well above elevated expenses for labour, materials and other inputs and contributed much more to inflation than wages? What? Research from Australia Institute Centre for Future Work's Jim Stanford found inflation would still be within the Reserve Bank's target band of 2-3% if Australian firms weren't making excess profits for goods and services. And Philip Lowe wouldn't be public enemy number one. Probably something for you to consider, Phil. Which, based on this new information, it might seem like he shouldn't be receiving all that hate, that he's been unfairly maligned. But allow me to double down for a moment. Because Philbo Baggins. When your job is to balance the inflation rates, it's probably best that you understand the underlying causes of said inflation. Don't hang the paws out to dry, berating them for being too greedy and not wanting to starve to death while a man on $900,000 a year increases the inflation rate again and again and then tells us that it won't go up again and then increases it again for funsies. Oh, but this time it definitely won't go up. Oh, whoopsie, I made it go up again because the filthy fools won't agree to that damn pay cut. So, William Shakespeare here remains the Michael Jordan of falsely accusing the poor of destroying the economy. Dr. Stanford said, Australian Bureau of Statistics data shows that without excess price hikes through the pandemic, inflation would likely be within RBA target bands, and there would be no need for the 9 extreme back-to-back interest rate rises that were crushing households and mortgage holders, fueling the cost of living crisis. However, that did happen, which is tough for those who are hoping to survive another year without eating one of their children to ensure that the rest of them survive. Dr. Stanford said, we've been told a story that workers need to restrict wage growth and accept a permanent reduction in living standards in order to fix inflation. This evidence shows that's an economic fairy tale. Man, fairy tales sure have changed since when I was young. We'd learn cautionary tales relevant to life in the 17th and 1800s, mostly involving wolves, frogs, and some other kind of wooden beast. But these days, who knows what you'll get in a fairy tale. Now, RBA Governor Philip Lowe continues to warn about the unlikely and disastrous consequences of a wage price spiral, which is where increasing prices drive wages higher, which in turn pushes prices higher again. Seems he is a fan of the permanent underclass method of saving the economy, where we fail to lift up the poor and the suffering, opting to instead ensure the workers' souls are equally crushed with their paychecks. We can't have these people thinking they deserve better. They might do something about it. This isn't France. We don't riot at the drop of a hat, so you can calm your farm, Lobo. No, we have cultural cringe when it comes to respecting ourselves. We love Ned Kelly and the bushrangers of old because they fought the authorities, but when we are expected to stand up and take our own, oh, no, 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 nothing is that bad. Nothing could possibly be that bad. Why do we need to make a stand against our local supermarkets for price gouging us in a time of national emergency? It's a whole fuss. Why would we do that? We need to save our outrage for a cause that matters. Like, I don't know, cutting taxes for higher earners. You better believe that there will be letters of complaint. No need to chase down profit hoarding dragons like Jerry Harvey. Don't think that we forgot about you, Jerry Harvey. When are you paying back the remainder of that JobKeeper, Jerry? When are you paying it back, huh? We haven't forgotten. Best we continue to drive people downwards into desperation so they'll accept worse and worse wages without complaint. Never forget the system is built on having the Nauru, a percentage of population that is needed to always be out of work without causing wage growth and inflation to rise. And one of those things is already out of control, so why not push the other one out of control too? As always, the solution fall on the individual, while big corporations skip off into the sunset, holding hands and giggling while we pick up the refuse of the economy. Surely we could have had a better solution, like lifting the social security rate to a minimum poverty line, allowing struggling families to eat food and pay rent, and look for work that won't exploit them. You know, during COVID, in the early stages of 2020, poverty dropped below 10% because of the raise in social security rate. The end of JobKeeper and the supplement has seen the proportion of Australians living in poverty rise to 14%, or more than 3.8 million people. It was at 11% before COVID. Things have gotten worse. Because you know Australia's number one approach to fixing institutional problems. Put them on a distant island, deny them support, and claim there was no problem to begin with. When they get out of hand, maybe shoot them for being uppity. We'll see how we go. See if we're feeling frisky. We shouldn't be at the point where an artist converting a skip bin into a housing unit to avoid the rental crisis for a year is looked at with a kind of quiet nod and acknowledgement of his genius. This man is literally living in a bin like Oscar the Grouch, and this is what's considered a life hack these days. And I know that this is just an art piece and he's making a statement, but I guarantee you within a year, the design for the bin home will be bought out by a major construction company looking to disrupt the industry, and they'll be selling them to the government as low-cost housing solutions. I mean, you could fit 3 to 4 skip homes to a plot of land, really, if you try hard enough. The good thing about these new homes is that not only do they serve as a fitting on-the-nose metaphor for the dumpster fire of a hellscape that we've created for ourselves, when you die in it, they can just light the whole thing up and turn it into a literal dumpster fire, cremating you and leaving the bin space clear to build a new home in because the metal of the bin won't burn through. And we have reached the end of another episode of the Bearer of Weird News. Thank you so much for hanging out with me, for making it all the way to the end. I'm not sure how long this one was today, but if you made it all the way through, I appreciate it. If you're a regular listener, I apologize. Like, I genuinely do apologize. I mean, to skip out on so many episodes. Like I said, things have been tough at the moment, but hopefully things will pick up, tour will smooth out, and things will be a lot easier, and I'll be able to put out episodes in a regular manner once I've moved house, which is, as you know, quite a hassle. I always appreciate you guys, appreciate your time. If you enjoyed the episode, please do whatever platform you're on, like it, share it, give it 5 stars if you liked it, give it 1 star if you didn't. There's no in between. And have yourselves a good time, get out there. I really appreciate all of your time and effort, and I will see you in the next one. If you've got a subscription to the Patreon, the bonus episode is coming your way. I still found time to put a bonus episode together, but until then, look after yourselves, guys. I'll see you at a live show, hopefully. Goodbye. Thank you.